but it's apparent you're expanding the number of people you share time with, and I have a home fit for entertaining. So yes, our next dinner party. And Cam would be an excellent candidate. He's an interesting man, very funny, and has the miraculous ability to shovel huge amounts of shit Branch Dillinger's way, and Branch takes it. It's fascinating. Dillinger was not the kind of guy who took any shit, so that would be. It sounds like, except for you getting increasingly pissed at me, you had an interesting couple of evenings, she noted cautiously, not wanting to take him back if he wasn't entirely over what they just went through.
I would hazard to say yours were more interesting.
He tipped his head to the side.
Which one is the dark one?
Maddox.
The man fucks like a machine.
Six smiled up at him again.
I didn't have a good view, but it also appears he can take it like a champ, he remarked.
She cuddled closer. He's a very experienced switch. Stellan drew her closer.
Get any pointers?
I was working, baby, she murmured. He hummed, bending and touching his nose to hers. Okay. So he was over what they went through. Good knowing he was a man who could not only talk through important issues and do it while listening, but also get over it. No, that was excellent.
When he pulled away, he didn't go very far. Do you wish to observe them again?
He asked quietly. I don't know. They really like having me around. We definitely connected in a way I don't think I've ever really had with anybody. Stellan looked wary at that, so Six rushed to assure him. I mean in a friendship way, baby. Seriously, they all hugged me before we parted tonight, and they assured me whatever was bothering you would be okay. But as for their play, it seems very intimate. And like I said, they don't do male doms, and if you can't be there, it wouldn't be any fun. I do know I'd like to get to know them all better and introduce them to you.
We'll do that. And if it goes to that place, perhaps they'll enjoy doing their thing in our playroom for you to enjoy. And if they're not comfortable having me around while they do, I can keep myself entertained elsewhere. And we can all share a drink after they're done.
That was a surprising offer for a variety of reasons. She was only going to question one. You're going to keep your playroom?
Considering you don't have the option to meet certain needs in our bed, and we found it useful for other things, I think it would be foolish to dismantle it.
Nice. Agreed, she replied, pressing closer.
Darling, he said on a squeeze. If you were not wishing me to do that, it's your playroom too, so you simply need to say, this is your home, and what happens in it and to it needs to be a joint decision.
I will in future, she promised.
Two,
he stated firmly, and confusingly. Sorry?
Two.
Two what?
I want two children.
Six froze in his arms. He gathered her closer to his warmth. Darling, we're just going to need, she blew out a breath. When you held Crosby, you were so Stellan. But with a baby in your arms. It was awesome. It was gorgeous. It made me feel wonderful things and terrifying ones. But you were just all that's you with a baby. How did you do that?
No one knows how to handle a baby until they actually handle one, sweetheart.
Well, she'd handled one that night, too. And the kid just wanted his stayin'.
She didn't remind him of that. She said, okay. And no one knows how to be a parent until they become one.
That was true, and it made sense. She nodded.
We've been together only weeks, he declared.
I know.
I don't intend to attempt to impregnate you tomorrow, She grinned at him and relaxed in his arms. I know. We can work up to that. Well, that was a relief. Is this normal? She asked. Now he looked confused. Is what normal? Things like we have, getting so deep in only weeks, she explained. The confusion left his handsome face, and tenderness entered it. As you know, honey, I'm not only not terribly concerned with normal, I avoid it vehemently. That almost made her laugh, because not only did she know that very well, it was part of why she loved him so much. I do know that, she confirmed, and we haven't been together for mere weeks. We've been living together for mere weeks. In relationship terms, I would suspect that's more like being together for 3 months. In terms of a relationship with you, it's more like 3 years. She smiled up at him, even as she swatted his shoulder in fake indignation. He grinned down at her with humor, but the grin changed to just warm and sweet when he went on. And you forget. I knew you, and you knew me in a variety of ways, prior to this starting, darling. I am not a young, impetuous man, and you're not 18. We both know at this juncture in our lives what we want, and thus knew when we found it. So I wouldn't concern myself with time, Simone. Just feelings. As ever, her wise Stellan had all the answers. So, we're learning a lot about each other tonight, she remarked. You're even more protective than I knew, and have an impressive right hook. We both need to be more forthcoming about our activities. We're going to have a variety of parties. I'm good at my job, but absolutely do not intend to take unnecessary risks while doing it. You want to be a father, and I'm down with that. Probably. And when you're angry with me, you still make me drinks. Did I miss anything? His lips were twitching when he answered. Not that I can tell. Do you think Ami and Naya had a good date tonight? She asked. I think Naya is getting vanilla fucked to within an inch of her life tonight. Her body started shaking with laughter, and her voice was shaking with it when she shared. When they got home, Maddox was going back at Diesel, too. His brows hiked up. The big one can take more. Molly says they go all night. But Maddox was turned way the hell on with Diesel beating the crap out of Beardsley. And he's top dom, so I'm not sure Dee has a choice. He won't be able to walk tomorrow, Stellan murmured. I'm not certain he cares. Stellan gave her a certain look. So everyone we know is fucking, but us. Well, I'm not sure everyone we know is fucking, she teased. Darling, excepting M, but including Susan and Harry, who have a very active sex life, and I will not share the excruciatingly painful reasons I know that, or details of the same. Everyone we know is likely fucking or has already gotten fucked. She got up on her toes, sliding her hands up his back. Well, we better catch up, she muttered, her eyes falling to his beautiful lips. Agreed, those lips said. Then he used them to kiss her. And he didn't stop as he started walking her around the dining room table. Six broke it off, still walking backward because she was compelled to do so, since she was in Stellan's arms and he was moving forward. Honey, she whispered, if you intend to say anything that will delay me getting inside you, please save it. We can talk after. I just wanted to thank you for listening, talking tonight through, being cool and being so easy to love. Immediately she was whipped around, lifted up, and found herself planted ass to the dining room table. She then found herself gasping when she felt Stellan's hand up her skirt, and in a blink, she was divested of her panties. Okay, you really don't want to delay, do you? She breathed. His response was to yank up her skirt, But he didn't even have to make that response. His face was dark and his eyes were burning. She read him. She lifted a hand, hooked it around the back of his neck, and pulled him to her. His mouth against hers, his hands spreading her legs, he whispered, "Darling, if you intend to say anything that will delay you getting inside me, save it." She felt his hand, now working his jeans. "I just wanted to tell you, I hope you know how much I love you." She didn't smile, she didn't simper, she didn't whimper. She pulled her man's mouth to hers and kissed him. Hard. Stellan slid inside and fucked her. Sweet. And hard. And they joined the ranks of the fucking, the perfect end to their evening. And Six wouldn't think about it then, her mind being on other things. But she would think about it later. And in that later, she would realize why she no longer needed to take risks for whatever reason she'd taken them. Because she'd taken the greatest risk of all. And bested the fuck out of that bastard. Epilogue. The King and His Queen. 6. Tuesday night. Six sat in her throne by the gladiator pit beside Stellan, looking across to the thrones at the curve on the opposite side. Naya was sitting there in a bright fuchsia wraparound dress with a halter bodice made of a delicate ruffle that curved around her neck and flirted at her cleavage. The skirt was opened, showing a goodly amount of beautiful brown skin of shapely legs that shone like they'd been oiled. These legs led down to a pair of utterly stunning silver high-heeled sandals that glittered in the overhead lights of the stadium. Her head was up, regal, but her eyes were cast down at her feet where her warrior was fucking the gladiator he'd just defeated soundly for his princess. Ami's ass bunched around the warrior dragon's tail, proudly planted inside, that he'd worn strolling in and throughout the bout. Their eyes were locked as he fucked for her, and her glossy lips were parted, showing her gladiator how much she enjoyed it. Although it was a tremendously entertaining performance, Six's eyes wandered to exactly opposite where she and Stellan were sitting, to where Amelie sat in a throne next to Evangeline. They were turned toward the action, Evangeline so far as twisted in her seat and leaning on the arm of her chair to take it in, her face rapt with interest to Lee's much more dignified expression. She just wore a cat's smile. Both their men were elsewhere that evening. But both the women were clearly enjoying their girl's night out. As if feeling her regard, Lee looked to her, seeing her beside Stellan holding hands, and that cat's smile became a different kind of smile. Six returned it. It was then she saw that Leany had turned to look at them too, but she was looking at Stellan. She suddenly lifted her hand, and Six didn't know much American Sign Language, but she did know the alphabet. And Leany spelled out the word fool with her hand and pointed at Stellan. She was smiling madly. But Six felt her brows snap together as her hand, which Stellan was holding, got a squeeze. She turned to him with her mouth moving. "Why did Leany just call you a fool?" "I once accused her of being a fool in love," he answered unperturbedly. "She's returning that favor."
"Wow. Okay, then," she smiled at him.
His eyes dropped to it as his hand brought up hers. He rubbed her knuckles against his lower lip, and she watched that far more avidly than she'd watched any of what she'd been treated to that pleasurable evening.
"Having a good night?" he asked.
She studied him. Then she looked between their thrones to the bleachers right behind them,
that were elevated enough to see over the backs of the chairs to give a full view. Sitting right behind them, 1, 2, 3, were Maddox, Molly, and Diesel. She'd figured out what she could give them to thank them for all they'd done. When she'd made the offer, they'd turned it down, but they hadn't turned down those tickets. Sensing her attention, Molly tore her engrossed eyes from Ami and Naya, looked down to Six, and immediately lifted up both hands formed in thumbs-up positions, pumping them in front of her as a happy smile beamed out of her face. Her men, always attuned to their Molly, noted her movements, and both took their absorbed attention from the festivities, gave it to their woman, then transferred it to Six. Dee, of course, gave her one of his cheeky grins and added a wink. When she took in Maddox, he mouthed the word, nice. In a way, even mouthed, she knew was drawled and underlined in spirit with his mini-boom. The trio turned their attention back to Ami, and Six turned hers back to her man, only then answering his question. I'm happy. At that, his hand snaked out. He caught her head, pulled it to him, and took her mouth, thrusting his tongue inside, powerfully claiming what he had no reason to claim, seeing as it was all very much his. There was an unmistakable roar right before a roar from the crowd, and Stellan broke their kiss so they could give their attention back to Ami and Naya. Ami was arched magnificently into the ass he was climaxing into, his head thrown back, the cords of his muscles popping in his neck. His spine had barely relaxed when Naya shouted a majestic, "Come to me." And without delay, Ami pulled out, got to his feet, put a bare one in the back of his opponent, taking him down to his belly to another cheer from the crowd. But he didn't stand on him. He stood astride him as he bent to his mistress. Grasping either side of her neck in his hands, he pulled her up from her seat, not fully, but her ass was absolutely no longer the throne, and she was suspended by his hold on her neck and her hands in the arms of the chair. In that position, he consumed her mouth in a voracious kiss that had the crowd going wild, and proved beyond doubt that their date had gone very, very well. "Mistress Six saves the day," Stellan whispered in her ear. She turned to him, and he adjusted his head so she could catch his eyes. "I love you." Those eyes went soft, and I you. "Warning. If you keep it up this way, you're going to get sick of hearing me say that," she shared. "Never," he whispered. "Kiss me, master," she whispered back. He did, and he did it for some time. When he finally released her, the crowd had calmed down because Ami was gone, Naya was no longer seated on her throne, and the action had lulled, waiting for the next gladiators to duel.
"Totally getting you a dragon's tail, bro," she heard Maddox growl from behind them.
"Totally getting you one, my man," Dee returned.
"You're both totally getting one," Molly declared. "When you play with your pixie at home, you're now gonna be my dragon warlords."
"Word," Dee agreed, sounding keen. Maddox said nothing. Six grinned, then turned immediately to Stellan, leaned in and opened her mouth.
"Darling, please," he murmured before she could say anything. "Allow yourself to bask in the glory victorious of your last amazing feat," he indicated Naya's empty seat with an inclined head, "before jumping right into another one."
Since that night at the Bolt, she'd fully shared about her experience with the trio.
"They're so happy, and they're so good together. But if someone can get through to Dee, they could be more happy." She started softly so the trio wouldn't overhear.
"Make a deal?"
he asked, brows raised. She grinned again.
"Sure."
"1 week. Hang up your cape for 1 week.
Then you can dig into fixing all the problems of your precious menage.
Thanks, baby, she said to agree. But I don't wear a cape. I wear leather.
His eyes dropped to the bronze leather under her gold choker at her chest.
And I thank the superhero gods for that.
She burst out laughing. Stellan kissed her lips while she did it. Then the next gladiators came in. And the king and his queen sat in attendance, holding hands, enjoying their evening. Stellan. Stellan opened the door to his office and stopped dead. His first inclination was to clench his teeth so he wouldn't say anything he'd regret. What happened next made that effort unnecessary. The dancing, happy eyes of both the women he loved turned to him amid the laughter they were sharing, and one of them greeted through it, "Yo, boss man," while the other one greeted, "Hey, baby." He moved to the jam and leaned a shoulder against it, crossing his arms on his chest, aiming his gaze at Susie sitting behind the desk, not at Simone, who was standing in front of it.
"Have I not shared the instruction that you were to inform me when Simone was here?
She has her own keycard style. She showed to surprise you, to take you out to lunch, the operative word being surprise. And I was just telling her you have a lunch meeting, so we decided we're going to go out together instead." Stellan pushed from the door, ordering,
"Cancel my lunch meeting."
Susan's eyes got big. "Stellan, it's at 15 minutes.
"Cancel it,"
he repeated.
"I'm having lunch with my assistant and my girlfriend."
"You're negotiating a $7 million deal at this meeting," Susan reminded him. At that, Six's eyes got big, just as he made it to her and curved an arm around her waist, pulling her body into his. But he turned his head to Susan.
"The deal will still be there when we reschedule the meeting."
"You're annoying," she snapped. He raised his brows. She threw up her hands. "How am I going to get all the juicy tidbits of Stellan Lang as boyfriend from Simone with you sitting there?" she demanded to know.
"Precisely," he replied.
Simone laughed softly, and Stellan looked down to her.
"Where should we go for lunch?"
he asked. "I promise I would only tell her the parts about such things as you casually throwing thousands of dollars of gold and platinum custom-made jewelry in my lap like you did it every morning before taking your vitamins," she said instead of answering. "I wouldn't have gotten into the sex parts." "Good," Susan said into their exchange. "I can't handle the sex parts. He already seems like a god. I don't need proof. He is a god." Simone was laughing again. He felt it against his body, and it gave further indication that when he struck their deal weeks ago, he was very unusually, woefully unprepared for the ramifications of pulling out all the stops to make Simone Marchesa happy. In other words, just how doing that would return the feeling.
"Darling," I asked, "where would you like to go to lunch?"
he repeated.
"Where would you like to go?" "I'm in the mood for steak."
Her brows rose. "Aren't you always?" It was resolute when he replied,
"Absolutely."
To that, his Simone just smiled. It was warm. It was sweet. It was happy. That evening, having turned the page on the sketchbook to where Simone had finished her latest story, studying the image on the page, Stellan had a queer sensation he'd never felt before. As queer as it was, he knew instinctively it was one he'd forever treasure. The tone of her story had changed significantly. Through her new association with a mysterious, shadowy man who possessed great powers, it would seem Superhero Six had a lock on a miracle cure that was slowly erasing her scars with each good deed she did. So, as she fought to find ways to offer love and succor to the brave soldier through the arms of a beautiful princess, And as she kept her eye on the beneficent business tycoon who was in love with a protege, but his hesitation meant he might lose her to another man. And as she looked into the demons of a rough but handsome, loving and good-natured man, who had the love of a beautiful pixie and the adoration of a powerful warlord, her scars were fading. And in that last panel, Superhero 6 lay naked atop her shadowy savior, her forehead tucked into his neck, her legs straddling his thigh, his face obscured, but her face was not. Even still scarred, it was the first time she depicted her alter ego's expression as soft, unguarded, and filled with beauty. Yes, that queer sensation was something he'd forever treasure. So, what do you think? Six was reclined beside him on his Chesterfield, pressed to the back of the couch and down his side, her eyes on the sketch pad he held up, braced against his stomach. His voice was not his own, hoarse and gravelly, this catching her attention as her eyes shot to his when he asked,
"Is that how you see us?"
Gently, she answered, "That's how we are." Fuck, but he loved her.
"You should publish these, Simone."
Her chin jerked into her neck.
"They're extraordinary," he declared.
"They're my life, and now yours too."
"No one need know that. No one need know you did them at all. You can publish under a pen name."
They're beautiful. Your talent is unquestionable. They're provocative, they're erotic, they're emotional. You can't help but root for Six. And now, as the story turns, root for her and her shadowy lover, as she turns from life as a heroic anti-hero with a chilling, tragic, jaded past, to an unadulterated hero with a future filled with hope. "Stellan," she whispered. "Think about it, darling. I know people who publish erotica. They do very limited graphic novels, but I feel they'd jump at a chance at this."
"Someone might know it's you," she told him.
"I don't care," he replied,
"but I can't imagine they would. You cloak my face."
"I don't cloak mine."
"Regardless,
I want you protected."
Of course she did. She was Simone, but she'd always be Six.
"That's hardly necessary," he said quietly. "Especially not now. No one's seen these but me. Though that's a shame, considering how remarkable they are. But just to say, if anyone were to guess it was me, I would far from care. And not simply because you've cast me as gallant redeemer to your hero, a savior, all-powerful. That's hardly unflattering."
She looked to the pad, mumbling, "I'll think about it."
He used his other arm, which was around her, to give her a squeeze, regaining her attention.
"I hope you truly do."
Her head quirked to the side, and an expression he could not read filtered over her pretty face. As was becoming her way, Simone did not make him wait or even ask after it. She gave it to him, freely.
"You know, I never thought I'd show these to anybody. Now I'm right here with you while you read them, and I'm honestly considering the idea of sharing them further."
"Does all that worry you?"
"No, I think it's...
She pressed closer and suddenly smiled.
"I think it's proof you are all-powerful."
Relaxing into her mood, Stellan chuckled.
"Thank you, baby," she whispered.
"My pleasure," he replied, "even though I don't know why you're expressing gratitude. You giving me the honor of sharing this with me?" He lifted the sketch pad to indicate what he was talking about. "Deserves the gratitude."
"And that," she lifted a finger and put it to his lips, "the fact you'd say something like that, the fact you're that man, is why I'm thanking you."
It was clearly time to move the evening onward. Therefore, with care, Stellan reached out and set the sketch pad on his coffee table. After he did that, he turned into his Simone. And after enjoying something extraordinary that was all Simone, he enjoyed something tremendously extraordinary that was all Simone. Simone. 6.
Six got into her Cayenne, looked at the dash, and froze. On it was propped a female action figurine wearing a fake leather bodysuit, little plastic high-heeled boots, a tiny mask over its eyes, short brown hair on its head, a miniature whip in its hand. In front of it sat a folded-over note with six written on it. Carefully, she reached out, took hold of the note, and unfolded it. It read,
6. Debt paid. Not going to miss worrying about your crazy ass, but I'm going to miss you. Your favorite asshole.
Carlo. She looked up and around the parking lot, seeing random people, not seeing Carlo. As she wouldn't. But he'd been watching her. He was likely watching her right now. Thus he knew more than from the fact he hadn't heard from her, undoubtedly looking into it because of that fact, that she was out of commission. He'd also figured out why. And he was happy for her. She grinned at the action figure as she took hold of it. It was the second doll she'd ever owned. This one was kick-ass. So this one she would keep. But that wasn't the only reason why. She bent the doll's legs to sit her on the seat beside Six and pulled out her phone. "Next time you're in town, come to dinner and meet my man," she texted Carlo. She was not surprised when she got no reply. She did not yearn for any part of her old life. But seriously, he could be a pain in the ass. But she was going to miss that guy.
Simone.
Simone was sitting next to Stellan at the island, having her breakfast and listening to M. prattle, when Stellan's phone rang. She looked to him to see him staring at it, sitting beside his plate, but her eyes immediately darted to the phone when she saw his brows had drawn together ominously. She just caught that the screen said Harry calling, before he snatched it up and put it to his ear.
"Hello, Harry, how?"
he started, stopped, and shoved back his stool so violently in order to burst out of it. Simone grew still before she jumped off her own stool, her gaze shooting to M, who was staring at Stellan, her face now pale.
"Of course," Stellan said on the move. "I'm leaving now. I'll be there as soon as I can."
Simone chased after him. M chased after Simone.
"Yes, right. Yes. I promise, Harry, I'll be there shortly," Stellan told him, and Simone practically had to run to keep up with his long, agitated strides.
He'd clearly disconnected because he took the phone from his ear. Before she could ask, he turned his head to look over his shoulder at her, but did it still moving.
"Susan's gone into labor. Harry needs someone to look after Crosby,"
he shared tersely.
"Oh, no. She's not due," Simone started.
"For 6 more weeks," Stellan clicked out, yanking open the door to the garage with such force it was a wonder he didn't pull it off its hinges.
"I'm coming with you," she said.
"Thank you," he bit off.
She kept hustling after him as she turned back to M.
"We'll be in touch," she said.
M stood in the door she was holding open and nodded. Stellan practically threw himself in his Tesla. Simone followed suit. She let him concentrate as he pulled out, and only spoke when they were on the road. Putting her hand on his thigh, she gave it a squeeze as she said softly, "It's going to be okay." Stellan made no reply. He just drove.
Stellan. Stellan looked to Simone, who was standing in the waiting room with Crosby on her hip, and was swinging him around, chattering to him, and he was chattering back like they were carrying on a weighty conversation,
when they were enumerating his favorite stuffed animals. Stellan's chest felt like it was filled with quickly drying concrete. It was the second time in his life when he consciously had to remind himself to breathe. The first was when he'd opened the door to his own car in his father's garage and realized his sister was dead. Harry had been sent out of the delivery room due to the fact they'd had to perform surgery, an emergency C-section, for some reason that had been explained but Stellan was not in the state to grasp. Both mother and child were in distress. However, half an hour ago, Harry had been called to his wife. They gave no further news, no staff had returned to share any, and they'd not seen Harry since. Stellan sat still in his chair, which he thought was a miracle, considering he was coming out of his skin. "Who's that?" he heard Simone ask, and he focused on her, saw her head bent toward Crosby still at her hip, but she was pointing at Stellan.
"Stan!" Crosby yelled.
She pointed to herself. "Who's this?"
"Shimo."
"That's me." She smiled at him and held him closer, swinging him around. "Shimon."
"Daddy!"
Crosby cried. Simone whipped around, and Stellan's head jerked toward the door as he straightened from his seat. Harry walked in looking haggard, but not destroyed, and Stellan started breathing slightly easier. He was with a nurse, but she stopped at the door to the waiting room as Harry strode right up to Simone and gently took his son from her arms. He pulled him tight to his chest, murmuring,
"Hey, son, hey, boy."
He drew in a ragged breath.
"You've got a baby sister."
Stellan closed his eyes.
"Sister!"
Crosby shouted. Stellan opened his eyes and watched Harry's come to him.
"She wants you, brother."
Stellan glanced at Simone, fell more deeply in love with her, at the soft relief shining from her beautiful face as she kept her gaze on him. But he did this, walking directly to the nurse.
"Just follow me," she said.
He did, and he felt she moved far too slowly. He was taken to the door of a room that, when she stopped at it and before she could say a word, he pushed straight through. The nurse did not follow, and she vanished from his mind as he saw a wan Susan lying propped in a hospital bed with a very tiny bundle cuddled to her chest. Stellan stopped dead at the door, hearing it close behind him. But with the crush of emotion he had not allowed himself to feel landing on him now that he saw them both alive and well, he was unable to move. Susie's eyes lifted right to him.
"She's fine," she said, sounding how she looked, exhausted. "She's breathing on her own, and nursing on her own, which is a relief. They say she'll sleep a lot and we'll have to keep her warm, but other than that, she's good. I'm good. We're all good, Stell."
Stellan still didn't move. Susie kept her gaze locked to him.
"We've named her Seeley, honey," she whispered.
It was at that he remained unmoving for an entirely different reason. Also at that he allowed one, just one tear to fall from his eye. Then he pulled himself out of his inertia, walked direct to her, bent in, and kissed his girl on the forehead. He moved and kissed his new girl on her diminutive but mercifully chubby cheek.
"Hello, Seeley,"
he said quietly. He heard Susie's soft sob and lifted his head to look at her.
"Shh, no," he murmured. "None of that."
"I really love you, boss man,"
she said hoarsely. He looked into her beloved eyes.
"And I thank God every day you do."
She swallowed and pulled her bundle closer. The door opened and Stellan straightened away to watch Harry walk in.
"Crosby?"
Susan asked.
"He's with Six. He's good. I'm excited about his sister,"
Harry answered, walking to Susan's other side. He sat on the bed, put a hand to the rump of his daughter, and bent close to kiss the lips of his wife.
"We'll bring him in when it's time. Then we'll take him home with us and bring him back when it's time,"
Stellan offered. "His things," Susan started.
"It's my understanding. Simone is adept at breaking and entering, sweetheart. We'll be fine," he assured.
"What?" Harry asked, confused. It was only then Stellan found true relief. Because Susan started laughing. Hours later, Stellan rounded the Chesterfield. And he stopped dead for the second time that day at what he saw. Simone, flat on her back, Crosby flat out on her chest, and just out. This was not a surprise. What was a surprise was that Simone was not also sleeping the sleep of the dead. Woman and boy had been on the go with toys, pool play, the kind of hide-and-seek you could enjoy with a 22-month-old, which happened to be exceptionally loud, and the very messy results of cookie baking from a tub when a toddler was the one forming the batter. She was always lovely. Right then, she was exquisite.
"Four," she said.
His gaze went from the child on her chest to her eyes. "Pardon?" he asked.
"Not two. Four.
Or at least three." Staring at her, before Stellan could open a throat that had suddenly closed, Em bustled around the couch, tisking. "He should have been in bed an hour ago." She reached out to Crosby, carefully taking him from Simone as she explained.
"He got a baby sister today. We had to celebrate."
Em shook her head in silent reprimand, but when her back was to Simone and her gaze came to Stellan, her eyes were dancing and bright. She winked at him, then she walked with Crosby to the stairs. Simone sat up and reached out to the baby monitor on the coffee table, muttering, "Considering the fact we've set up his bedroom in the same house, but still, it's in practically another state. Probably should figure out how to turn this on."
"Darling,"
he called. She looked up at him.
"Yes?"
"I love you."
Her face got soft. "I love you, too."
"Warning,"
he whispered.
"If you keep it up this way, you're going to get sick of hearing me say that."
The beauty of the look those words wrought was indescribable.
"Never," she replied.
Simone. The bed moved when Stellan joined her in it, rousing her from sleep. Even if that hadn't happened, he would have roused her, considering he claimed her. Doing this, turning her, pulling her to him, and arranging her, mostly, on top of his body.
"How was it?"
she mumbled sleepily.
"Interesting,"
he replied. This caught her attention and cleared some drowsy, forcing her head off his shoulder to peer at his shadowed face in the dark.
"How was it interesting?"
she asked.
"Barclay plus Arius co-hosting a bachelor party, darling?
How do you think it was interesting?"
he asked back.
"Were there strippers?"
she continued the interrogation.
"Absolutely not."
"Was there flesh?"
"Absolutely."
The drowsy disappeared, and her hand began to move to find out for herself, even as she queried,
"Are you turned on?"
"Not exactly."
Her hand stopped on his tight abs.
"What does that mean?" she inquired.
"I don't know. I've never had buds," he stated. "But I do think one of the cardinal rules to having them is that what happens at a bachelor party stays at the bachelor party."
Unable to stop it, she dropped her head to his chest, and Simone burst out laughing. Ollie and Lee were getting married the next weekend. And that night, Stellan had attended Ollie's bachelor party. Actually, he'd been invited to both of them,
The first one was given by Ollie's best buddy from the firehouse, some guy named Chad. This one, though, only a certain variety of Ollie's brothers were invited to attend. Since she'd known Ollie, he and Stellan had always shared an affinity. But apparently, when Stellan became involved in the situation at the Bolt, he'd been adopted by the bro crew that included Ollie, Barkley, and Branch, and they had recruited Arius along with Stellan. It wasn't often, but it wasn't rare, that they met for drinks. Stellan met with them, acting like it was somehow under duress. But Stellan didn't do anything under duress. He liked them. He'd even asked Maddox and Diesel to join them. And they had. When she stopped chortling, she lifted her head and asked, "Was it sordid? Do you think Arius would do anything sordid?" She kept grinning at him through the dark. "Why are you answering my questions with questions?" "Because I'm trying to communicate to you. None of your questions are going to get answered." That made her burst out laughing, too. "Branch proposed to Leany last night," he announced. Simone went still. "She, obviously, accepted." He carried on. "Holy God," she breathed. "In his style, he's warned they'll be having a very low-key ceremony with limited invitations being sent."
"Do you think we'll be invited?"
"As far as I know, Branch holds regard for 5 people. Ollie, Barkley, Cam, Arius, and me. So unless by limited he meant only him and Leany will be in attendance, I'd wager yes."
"Cool," she mumbled.
He turned to her so that he was now on her.
"If you're awake," he murmured.
"Did Ollie have a good time?" she whispered.
"The man is much loved. That was proved without doubt tonight."
"So yes, darling,
he did,"
he whispered back. That was the only question that she needed answered. She communicated that by sliding her fingers in his hair. And her Stellan, as ever, missed nothing. Certainly not that.
"Stellan."
"Simone."
"Stellan."
"Come, Simone."
She came. Wrapped around him, the spiked heels of her Zanotti sandals digging into his ass, her head shot back, and she shuddered as her pussy clutched him through her release. His hips moved, stroking inside her, caressing her the only way he could through it, and as she came down. When she was done, she kept her arms locked firm around his shoulders, but adjusted her legs so her heels were no longer digging into his flesh.
"You didn't come," she whispered.
"I'll be coming with you sleeved, your silk sashes binding you knees wide to my bed, those shoes still on, but calves bent up and trussed to your thighs. But like now, you'll be wearing nothing else, your face in my pillow, my cock up your ass," he growled.
She shivered, impaled on him.
"To do that, you need to untie me,"
he pointed out thickly but rationally.
"After I do, should we enjoy a drink before we leave?"
she teased.
"You just earned that ass-fucking with very red cheeks."
That set her to trembling.
"Simone,"
he warned. She kissed him. He kissed her back. Then she climbed off, dropping to her feet, and she knew what she was buying when she zipped herself into her skin-tight cream leather boat-neck dress before she moved to her man to release him. The shades were up on their room at the Honey. This was at Stellan's decree. He liked them to show off when he worked her, when she used him. Sometimes, however, if it was in her power, she closed them. Because some moments were just for them. This night, her work had been inspired. So she did not.
However, the switch Mistress Six and the seemingly switch, but not so much, Master Stellan had lost the allure of most the patrons of the honey, so their audience tonight was thin. They were more interested in what was happening with Talia and Arius. As it went, and always would, happily ever afters only remained exciting to the ones living them. But as she turned to attend to the white ropes that bound her man, she thought it was a shame she had to let him loose. Her work had been sublime. She took a mental snapshot to sketch it later before her fingers moved to the web of rope and knots she'd tied up his back, ropes rounding him at waist, ribs, under his bulging shoulder blades, and along the sides of his neck, as well as at his biceps, with a fanciful and hot set of doubled-over bindings at his right thigh. The ropes also led from biceps to wind again and again around his wrists, and from junctures of the riggings, from biceps to wrists, led ropes that also wound again and again around a ring suspended from the ceiling, to which his arms were raised and his fingers curled around. All this led up from a similar formation at the front that tucked through his legs, embedded in the crease of his beautiful ass, up to web at his back. As she'd noted, it was inspired. She'd had to use him to hold herself up, to use him, since he was on his feet but did not have the use of his arms, and as she untied him, she saw the marks her heels had made in his ass. She whisked a hand across one. "That okay, baby?" she whispered. "I like restraint, as you've discovered. And as with your experimentations with paddles and switches shared, I also enjoy pain. So yes, as those scenes were far more prolonged, this is nothing. However I liked it, understanding I would soon give it. So stop concerning yourself with your marks and untie me, darling." She suppressed a smile and got back to the matter at hand. When he was fully released, the white rope falling to the floor at his feet, with an arm he swept her against his body and took her mouth in a kiss that left her silly. "Of all that, outside having your pussy and your heels digging deep, I enjoyed the placement of the ropes best, my Simone," he murmured. "So when we get home, I'll be working you after you plug me." God, she loved it when he was in that mood. Her legs started shaking, so she held on. "Can you stand?" he asked. "Maybe," she answered. "Please try, so I can get dressed and we can go home." She nodded, let him go, managed to stay upright on her own two feet as he moved to his clothes, unconcerned there were members lingering outside the windows. Watching him the way he was, all that he was, she thought seriously. He was just so... everything. Simone stayed where she was and called. "You know I love you," as he pulled on his trousers. "Yes." She grinned. "You know this is totally making my sketch pads," she shared. "Yes," he repeated simply. "You better give it to me good at home, honey." "So that'll make it too," she urged. He turned to her, shrugging on his shirt. "Do I ever not?" She shook her head. "Nope." His eyes dropped to the rose-gold collar at her neck. "You gave a mark, you've earned one. Alas, that means that will eventually have to be removed." He was buttoning up his shirt when she replied with feeling, "Alas." His gaze came to her eyes. "Your impudence will also need to be addressed. Nothing you're saying is not making me think that you're dressing way too damn slowly." That was when he smiled his oh-so-special smile, and started doing his buttons a lot more leisurely. She crossed her arms on her chest and hitched out a foot. catching her stance, set those smiling lips to twitching.
"Do you know I love you?"
he asked.
"Yes," she answered.
"Good," he murmured, reaching for his tie. He lifted up his collar.
"For God's sake, Stellan, we're going home. You don't need to knot your tie.
Get over here, Simone."
She huffed her way over. The instant she was in arm's reach, he grabbed hold, shoved her against the door, and ravaged her mouth. She was finding it hard to breathe when he lifted his head.
"You'll wait, Simone,"
he growled.
"Of course, baby," she breathed.
"Mm-hmm,"
he prompted in that purr of his that slithered so lovingly against her clit. She arched into him, tightening her arms around his shoulders.
"Of course, my master," she whispered. "There's my Simone,"
he murmured, staying in her hold even as he knotted his damned tie. But as ever, he was right. His Simone. There she was. And always would be. No longer wondering what it would feel like not to be healed. But you were again whole. Knowing precisely what it felt like to be healed and made whole, as well as safe, in love, happy. Knowing she'd have all this for as long as she was breathing.
This has been an Audible Studios production of The Greatest Risk. Written by Kristen Ashley. Performed by Lizbeth Gwynn. Executive producers Rena Ayer and Mike Charzik. Producer Neil Bazik. Copyright 2018 by Kristen Ashley. Sound recording copyright 2018 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.